Final presenter will be Alicia Elwood, the Partnership Chair for the Minnesota Health Literacy Partnership, and she's also the Senior Project Manager of Quality Improvement and Health Management at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota.
I have to say I'm a little jealous because I'm here to talk about what you can do with zero FTEs. So, we'll see how that goes. One thing that's different about Minnesota that I found as I go around and talk is that we have sort of this history of collaboration and partnership. So we, back in 2005, had a brief workshop where people started to talk about health literacy. And at that time, that was the first I'd heard of it, too. And we were so jazzed about this. This was such an exciting topic and something that everybody, you know, kind of got at some basic level. You know, what is the importance of understanding health information? It's huge. You know, everybody needs to understand. However, in Minnesota, we always think that we're doing really well, right? We are the best at this, or we're doing great in healthcare, or, you know, we're one of the healthier places to live in Minneapolis, so we don't need to work on this, but it's not true. So that was one of our first barriers, is to remind people that everybody struggles with understanding health information from time to time. So back in 2005, when we first got together, after this great workshop summit, we were excited. We said, is there anybody that wants to keep working on this? Is there anybody that wants to still talk about this? And there were maybe a dozen of us that raised our hands. So we started meeting, and I call this sort of our discovery phase, where we started to get together, and we weren't really formalized. We were just a bunch of folks getting together, still talking about how great health literacy was, and, you know, how we just wanted to revel in sort of that realization that this is a great new topic to talk about. Well, it wasn't that new. I know people have been working on it for a really long time. But, you know, it's still starting to come across the country. So we were getting together, and we thought, you know, we can't just have this be a bridge club or something. We need to start to form some structure. So the discovery phase was fun, and we thought, well, this is neat. We're finding out what other people are doing, if anything, in Minnesota. And in 2006, we decided that we needed to think about structure a little bit. How are we going to make this work? We need to have some sort of idea of what we're doing, where we're heading, why we're coming together. So we started to look at who's at the table. And we brought competitors together. I'm from Blue Cross and Blue Shield. The other large health plans were also at the table. In Minnesota, we're a little unique. All our health plans have to be nonprofits at this point, so I think that helps us have sort of this more collaborative sharing kind of model. But I also think that health literacy is an opportunity. If you're looking for some way to bring groups to the table, health literacy is a great place to start. Everybody sees the need. There's not a huge amount of, what should I say, fiscal money along with health literacy, so you're not going to lose your market share, some of those things. Everybody gets, you know, health literacy. So it's a nice way to bring people to the table. So we had this discovery, then we had this awareness of needing to form some structure. As we did that, we also discovered over the years that there were several that still didn't understand what health literacy was, even that were at the table. So we started to focus on some internal education around what was happening in the health literacy field, and we hired a consultant. We had a small grant, I don't even know how much, just a few $1,000s, and we found a very engaged, interested consultant that would work with us on these little short-term projects. And we did three sessions where we had more of an expert come in and talk to us about health literacy, kind of build up our own knowledge. If we're going to be experts in the state and advocates in the state, we needed to know what we were talking about, right? So we did that, and we created white papers that we published internally in Minnesota to start to educate and build awareness across the state. So we've been basically formed since 2006. You have my sheet, too, which talks about our mission and our goals. And as we looked at structure, we decided we needed to have some more formality. So I am jealous of you guys. You guys are very formal and structured, and you have this sort of in the bag already. But as a partnership, really, of volunteers, you know, it took us a while to figure out what we really wanted to look like. And we did think about kind of three different models. We could just continue to network and just meet and just chat about what we're doing at our own organizations. We could look at sort of a fiscal agent, fiscal sponsorship agreement or an arrangement like that. So if we wanted to have membership dues or get some money in to work on some specific projects, we could have that sort of arrangement. Or we could go for the 501c3 and be a standalone organization. And, you know, I think a lot of states that really is the dream. That's not really for us. You know, the first speaker talked about, you know, you need to do what's working in your state, what might work for you. And for us, these partnerships and collaboratives really do work for us. We have several. So to add a health literacy one seemed to just fit with the natural flow of the way we do things in Minnesota. So, you know, we talked about needing to educate, building the structure. So we did, you know, have some strategic planning meetings, and we decided, okay, well, we need a chair. So I said, well, I can be the chair if you don't care. And they said, sure, we just look for anybody to be the chair. I said, what? You just look for anybody to be the chair? Okay, fine, I'll still be the chair because I'm excited about this topic. So we have a chair, we have a small steering committee, and then we have the full partnership. And structurally, we meet once a month for the partnership. And we have kind of, throughout the years, kind of changed how we meet as well. You know, as you form a group and the group changes and you develop, you find new needs within the group. So they really liked the education part. But then they were like, well, we need to do something active. We need a product. We need something that people can see that we're actually doing something more. So the last few years, we've tried to create at least one product every year. And that has been hard because we are volunteer and we don't have staff. But the organizations that are members of the partnership do generously give of staff time so that they can work on collaborative partnership efforts. So to back up a little bit, we have the health plans, like I said. We also have large and small care systems in Minnesota as our members and partners. We have actually individual members, people that are just engaged and excited about health literacy like I am. We have nonprofits that are members of our organization. We have other community health, we have patient educators. We really do have a variety of people that come to our partnership meetings and take part in our activities. And this is a little hard to manage as chair, I have to admit, because we have, since we have such a variety of folks, we have a lot of different areas that they want to focus on. So if you look at our goals, our mission is to improve the health of all Minnesotans through clear communication. So we recognize that we want to, you know, improve the health of the entire state. We want this to be a statewide effort. Minnesota is kind of a large state, so we have geographic issues with getting people into the metro area to come for meetings. So we do use some teleconferencing and phone calls like that. And we have some groups that are looking at forming satellites kind of outside of our metro area group, which is very exciting for us. But we looked at our goals and we thought we have three main goals. One is to train and educate providers in how to clearly communicate with their patients. One is to empower patients to ask and seek out clear communication from their providers. And then third is that sharing of resources and the networking piece. So all of our activities are guided by these three goals that we have. And it seemed that everybody that attended, no matter if they were just an individual or they were a community clinic or they were a public health person or they were a large care system, could find themselves within one of those three goals. And as we created structure, we became tied with the Minnesota Literacy Council. We are an independently funded program of the Minnesota Literacy Council. So they just act as our fiscal sponsor. They don't provide us funding, but they do provide us free meeting space, which is very nice. And it's centrally located, so that's good. And we liked the Literacy Council because it was a neutral convener. It wasn't Blue Cross and Blue Shield. It wasn't United Healthcare. It wasn't Allina Medical Systems. It was a neutral place where we could come together and sort of leave our junk outside. We could come and we could talk and we could brainstorm and we could get engaged about the same topic. So we continue on this journey. We do have, since we have members, we have membership dues. We have very small dues, individuals $50. The largest systems pay $500. Our goal is more about getting people engaged at the table than really having a large funnel stream. We don't have a lot of staff to pay. We have no staff. So the funding goes to help us with any printing costs. We do have a website that we manage and host, that I manage and host. No. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, but I'm here to encourage you guys that you can do a lot with little. There is engagement around this topic. So, we have really no staff. We have small membership dues, this fiscal sponsorship relationship. And as we continue to form structure and think about where we wanted to go, if you're familiar at all with health literacy, you know there's always a debate about what health literacy really means, right? Okay, some of you are rolling your eyes. Oh, they had to bring up the definition. Well, we did. We did. And, you know, we went there, and part of me was like, we got to stop. You know, sometimes you just have to cut it off and say this is good enough. But as we thought about that, you know, it's really the patient's ability to read, understand, and act. But as we looked at our goals, we said, well, there's a whole part of our goal that's not even mentioned there. So we at the partnership expand the definition to the provider's capacity to communicate clearly, educate about health, and empower their patients. And then as I looked at us even more, I thought, well, the health plan, we're not really a provider. We're not really a patient. We are. I mean, I'm a patient. I'm a provider. But we're a system, too. So the system needs to be easily accessed, quickly navigated, and understandable by all. So we have expanded the definition to meet our needs in Minnesota and the needs of the partnership. And, you know, when I think about our lessons learned, I think that that's really important. You have to be, like Cindy said, flexible. You have to be adaptable. You have to adapt to what your state needs are, what your coalition, your partnership members' needs are, what they're looking for. You have to keep people engaged. If I just focused on the provider community, all those community partners that we had, they're going to leave. They're not going to want to stay in our partnership because I'm not meeting their needs. We're not considering what they need. Now, when we have no staff, one year, another lesson learned is don't take on too much. Don't get them too excited about what what you might do if you really can't do it. One year we split up and we formed three work groups kind of around these three goals of ours. We had one focused on creating a provider training to solidify and coordinate health literacy training across the state of Minnesota. No staff, so we're going to do that. We also had a work group that was going to look at patient empowerment. We're going to do a patient engagement strategy across the state of Minnesota, focusing on Ask Me 3, you know, empowering question asking at the doctors. And then we were going to have a big marketing campaign so people knew who we were and where we were and how to get a hold of us. That was a little ambitious, just a little bit. What we realized was that even though people were engaged and wanted to work on the topic, everybody had other full-time jobs. Health literacy was not their full-time job at their organization that they were coming from. It may be a part of their job. And I think as they became more engaged with the partnership, it has become more of their jobs. I think our partners have done a really good job of advocating within their own organizations to build health literacy programs, and that's part of our strength, is that we come together and we support each other in the work that we're trying to do at our own organizations. So we did create a health literacy 101 provider training, and we did a train the trainer with all of our partners, and that was really well received, and it's on our website. It's kind of a program to go. It has speaker notes and all those things. So we got one piece done. We did pilot a patient empowerment program with the Minnesota Literacy Council in their English as a Second Language class. We have yet to put that into a real curriculum, and I know there's some other things out there, but that was also well received. So we did pieces. You know, we had to, instead of like looking across the state of Minnesota, we just did what we could with the resources we had. So that's an important lesson too, because you don't want to get folks discouraged when you're working on an issue. So in the last couple years, We have done more kind of pulling back and saying, we know that we can't focus on an initiative that's going to meet everybody's needs every year. That was kind of too much. So as a collective, as a group, where do you want to focus this year? Who's going to give a little bit? You know, so one year, you know, we kind of thought the provider training was a little bit bigger, so the next year we focused more on the patient side. And then we've kind of been doing that so that they know that their turn's going to come around. It's going to come. They're going to get their buy-in sooner or later. Another lesson learned is to partner with others. Partner with, look at what's happening in your state. Partner with those activities. We did work with the University of Minnesota to create a Help Minnesota Seniors program, which is more of that patient empowerment side, and we've been promoting that across the country. And one thing that I feel sort of bad about when I come to these conferences too is that all our stuff is free because we're kind of free. So in some ways I think it's hard because I know there are a lot of organizations and agencies that are trying to make a business out of the health literacy materials. So then I'm like, oh, we're just free. Go to our website, download it. But ours is Minnesota focused too. So there's opportunity for other states to create things that make sense for their state and for their population. So go out and look at our stuff. Use it if you can. Use it to inspire or generate interest in your states. Maybe you can model something after our programs. But we have tried to stick with Minnesota focus because that's where we are. And I know that it's hard because you want to spread the health literacy message across everywhere, right? We want to spread the health literacy message everywhere. But that idea of having a state focus helps give us sort of legitimacy within our state because we are really focused on our state and trying to improve the health of our Minnesotans. Other lessons learned, time is valuable and scarce. And so is money. We heard some of the previous speakers talk about difficulty with getting grants and that, and I think that's why we have stayed with just a collaborative partnership model, because it's not really feasible for us to seek 501c3 status or actually to seek large grant funding at this time. We have applied for some grants and have not really received them, partly I think because we have such large players at the table. You know, think about who I have in the partnership. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you guys are like, yeah, oh, yeah. It's hard to get grant funding when they see United Healthcare is one of your partners. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And, you know, when we have the largest care systems in the state as our partners. So what we do is we leverage in-kind resources and time and effort to make activities happen. We recently, in Minnesota, are launching a campaign called RARE, which is Reducing Avoidable Readmissions Effectively. It is led by our quality improvement organizations in the state, and they came to us and they said, we think health literacy is critical to success of our campaign. Can you guys help us? And I said, oh, we've made it. We've made it. People know about us. They're asking us for help. So we decided to focus on the teach back method as a core component of their five areas that they're focusing on this reducing admissions effectively. So we have a small teach-back program, which is also free on our website. I just uploaded it last week, so it's new. We're still kind of piloting it, so if you see errors, let me know. If you use it, let us know. But that was an exciting initiative to be a part of, so that'll give us a lot more momentum that we don't need staff to promote, because there are other organizations that are leading that effort, and they just wanted us to be a part of it. So that is another thing. And I want to close with a quote from Margaret Mead. How am I doing? Do I have lots of time?
No, not really.
Okay. You never know. You never know. So I want to close with a quote from Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Thank you for your time.
We do have time for questions, if there are any.
Those are really good presentations, particularly on collaboration. And I'd actually like to expand on your definition of health literacy, which groans for that. I spend 90% of my time writing and editing other people's writing. And I have to say that health professionals are not really known for their writing skills or even basic grammar. And so I think health literacy really needs to start at the scientist level with scientists from NIH and other places, because I belong to the American Medical Writers Association for the last 30 years. And that group has really grown because they see a real need for people to be able to get their thoughts across in a very clear, concise manner. And it does start with the scientists. The scientists need to be able to communicate their science to people who are going to use the science. I had a situation the other day where Chris and I heard about, we were talking to people in community health centers, and they were saying that the dental director can't even talk to the health director because they come from very different professional backgrounds and they don't have the same language. So they need to be able to communicate with each other and then filter it down to the consumer. So in many cases, we've been focusing lately on the consumer, but it really needs to start much higher up there. And I just wondered if you've been working at all to deal with that situation.
I'd like to do that.
Okay.
Let's see.
You need to repeat the question.
Well, the essence of the question is, are you doing anything to help improve the health literacy and communication competency of the professionals? Well, I want to speak to it because that's a part of our mission, right? And one of the things we have going on that I didn't work into my presentation that you may be interested in is that I have a colleague whose specialty is cultural competency, and my area is health literacy, and we are working for the state of Maryland on an integration of cultural competency and health literacy competencies, and coming up with providers, and such as Mark will be invited to be a part of all of this, to see how could we incorporate this in the curricula of all of the health professionals in the state of Maryland. Now, there began to be such an interest outside of Maryland that last week at the National Health Literacy Conference, we convened people with expertise in both of those worlds, plus departments of health, and we worked our way through what it was 120 competencies, with one of the questions being, how could any instructor to help anybody get to that point? So working on, what are the five, or like they said in City Slickers, the one, what's the one thing that you'd want everybody to walk out of to be able to do that? So that's just one little piece of what we're working on. One of the things that Rima spoke to at that conference, Rima Rudd, was that she said all of our areas are cultures, and I think that's what you're talking about here, with its own set of practices, beliefs, values, terminology, and et cetera. So every encounter is a cross-cultural encounter, and it begins with us, the professionals. We must learn how to communicate with each other and with a multitude of people who seek or could use what we can provide. And once we recognize that, we see it that it is us, then we can start to make some progress. So I'm really glad you would raise that, and that is something that is we're pretty passionate about. We're really going to work on. So I'd like to talk to you some more.
Can you also teach basic writing skills?
Interestingly, I have.
She's really good at that.
I sometimes get criticized by students who say this course isn't about that. And I said, but you're about learning to be a professional person as to communicate. So, yes, that is something that we're working on in our courses and et cetera. One of the things I see, Dushanka Kleinman has come in. We have this wonderful research interaction day every year. And a perfect place to start teaching those skills of communicating is when you convert your research into a poster and or have 15 minutes or 12 to get the point across. And sometimes the point is so buried and it's finally down there and you've lost the person, you know. So we really have been working on giving awards to people who convert their work into something that the rest of us walking along looking at it can get. So we believe that that is a way to introduce them to that. And then I have this personal hope that when all of those students walk across that graduation stage and their theses and dissertations that are this long and almost impossible to pronounce, and everyone laughs, that one of these days there will be a subtext. The subtext will be this. The headline will be something that the people in the graduation ceremonies, who are the taxpayers of the state of Maryland, can understand and say, that school is producing somebody who's producing something that's important to me.
I'm going to actually add a little bit to that really quickly.
One of the things I think I said when I was speaking, it's about a partnership that we have in New Jersey. It's with Rutgers and Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield and account managers from pharmaceutical companies. And this is just for you to know. At this point, I haven't actually seen them, but Rutgers has actually worked on, and I'm not sure if they're completed, modules, teaching modules for the pharmacy students at the school. So keep that in the back of your mind. And when I went to do, I actually presented at the New Jersey Pharmacists Association 2 weeks ago. When I posted that on the health literacy listserv, do you guys know about that? Yeah, you, Ohio does, right, yeah. That's actually a great resource, and I can't even remember how to link into it.
You can Google.
Okay. Yeah, so that's something, if you're really interested, that listserv is great because it's a lot of speak around between different kinds of folks that could be academicians, just healthcare professionals, literacy folks, etc. So I posted that we were going to be speaking at New Jersey Pharmacists Association, and Cynthia Bauer wrote me back, and she said, could you please tell the folks there that we're getting ready to post, it's not ready now, a health literacy curriculum for pharmacists. And she sent me the confidential, the course. So it was actually done for them by a consultant. It was ABT, and I looked at it. So that's going to be posted on the CDC website. And another thing, too, you were talking about professionals doing trainings and workshops for professionals. And that's, as I said, when we started doing this work, we just decided that that's what we're going to do. So everybody that we present to through our training efforts are in some form or fashion a healthcare professional. So we do that constantly. If anybody wants to talk to me about it, you can give me a call. We can talk about our modules and what we do. So that's just out there for you to know. You had a question?
Yeah, I had a question about, has anyone used specific active learning, not just modules, but how to engage the students?
Oh, that's in our workshops. Our workshops actually range, they could go from an hour and a half to all day. They're all interactive. If it's an hour, and we were talking, you're talking about the readmits. We were going to do a workshop actually with Clara Mass, which is part of St. Barnabas System in New Jersey. And some of the things that you run up against, too, when you're working with providers, and we actually did do medical grand rounds for Princeton Medical Center, and that was fine. We got our hour to speak to them, and it was interactive. But you will run into, if you're working with provider bases and clinical bases, the time limit. So you've got to, we always do interactive stuff. I would recommend when you're doing it, you have at least 2 hours to do that. We're getting ready to do an activity with an organization that'll be 5 hours. And so it's an all-day training, which you'll have the foundational principles of health literacy, the guidelines best practices, what it is, stories, but yet we have interactive pieces that we do and where you actually do, you break out into sessions that can go on for at least a half an hour. So anyway, just wanted to add that.
You take the question.
Go ahead, Scott.
Mentioning that we have the Hamline Health Law Institute as one of our partners and sort of the battle that comes with making things simple but keeping things legal and the legalese that's often required by the lawyers. Some of what we've looked at is the intention of the document. You know, the legalese for patients is really to help safeguard the patient and looking at Why do they have this legal? Is it to safeguard the hospital? Well, sometimes. Is it to safeguard the patient? Yes. We've done a lot of work on informed consent, which kind of help is a bridge of this issue. You know, what does the patient need to really understand? And is informed consent just signing the form, or is it the process of really understanding the treatment? Sometimes at conferences, I've heard other lawyers speak on this issue too, and they say, well, nobody ever said you can't put an easy version on top of the legalese. So I wouldn't say we've made a huge headway in here because legalese is still needed and required and still a must from the lawyer's side. So it was fun to have the Hamline Law Health Institute come and be a partner with us. I have to admit that it was hard for them to come to the meeting, so we didn't get to sap as much from their participation as I would hope yet. But it is nice to have them starting to come to the table. I want to make one more announcement. I noticed that on my one-pager sheet, our website is incorrect. When we redid the website, we have a new website address. It's healthliteracymn.org. So if you're looking for our stuff, or you can just Google or Bing or Yahoo Health Literacy Minnesota. Want to be respectful to all the search engines. You want to talk a little bit about the legalese?
I just wanted to mention that we have a tool available to us to help with that. A year ago, Congress passed the Plain Language Act, and it went into effect on October 13th of this year. It directly affects all federal documents. So indirectly, any of us dealing with federal funds could use that as a leverage tool, in a sense, like Alice is often saying. It provides us with an opportunity to get some more people thinking about this. And behind a lot of that work for plain language, which has been going on now for quite a number of years, the centerforplainlanguage.org, if you wanted to check them out, they can kind of direct you to all of this. But were many lawyers, that's one of the things I want to point out, that it was lawyers, many of the lawyers, that worked with others inside the federal government to figure out how to explain things so people could understand it. Even some of them couldn't understand what some other lawyer had written. You know, after a while, and this is for the taxpayer and paid for by the taxpayer, and you know, they can't understand it. So just keep that in mind. That has just gone into effect, and so if you do go to the centerforplainlanguage.org, you would find the legislation and you could find people who could help you with that. I think at every health literacy conference I go to, this is coming up, especially around informed consent. But even at the university where we have to work through our IRB, because I have dealt with low-income people in almost all my research for all my life, we actually have a far better consent form now than we did when we got away from saying, do you really have to use the three-syllable word here, or could we use this word? You know, you look it up, it means the same thing. And so we've gradually gotten even the form to look differently. It's now laid out using some boxes and headers and questions and so forth. And it's still too long. There's a lot of stuff I wish we didn't have to do. But, you know, you work with what you can, where you can, to try to make some of those changes. I'm actually kind of optimistic that if enough people believe that we can do it, we can figure this out. Alice.
Well, I just want to add, Scott, that a lot of, quote, legalese is really no different than all of us saying gingivitis versus gum or periodontal disease versus gum disease. This is a way to control. This is controlling information. And if you talk to attorneys that you know, which I have, they will say they will agree to that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you a true story. Several people know this already, but I was looking around for an attorney to do my will and interviewing them. And the first one I asked, could you write this in plain language? And there was this long pause. And his answer was yes, but it would cost a lot more. They use boilerplate. You know, I mean, you think you're an individual, but you're not. And so, you know, it's boilerplate garbage with all of this legalese that doesn't need to be there. And just like we say a lot of words that don't need to be there. I'm convinced that we don't have to have a lot of legal jargon. No different than dental jargon.
Thank you. That's an excellent point. And goes back to your point about the students and their, we go through a culture in higher education of acquiring larger and more syllables and words that sound distinctive and show that we've mastered the jargon of the field. And we produce them and send them out in the world. And then we wonder why they're not communicating with people, you know? So what I always do is I have every student has to convert their entire thing into a front and back of a 2-page brief that could be understood by almost anybody, and that really hurts some of them. That's really hard to give some of that up, but you just got to work at it. So that's a great point, Alice.
Just one more last thing to add to this. Anybody here from California? Have you taken a look at the California Advanced Directive? All right, there's a traditional Advanced Directive that California has. It's their standard form, and it's about 8 pages long, and it's 8-point type every single page. And I actually used this in a presentation I just did. But they've come up with, and it's being used, a health literate advanced directive, which is about 12 pages long. It's a little bit longer, but it's filled with pictures and color and larger print. So Google California Advanced Directive, and you can kind of see the difference in what's happened, and it's been approved. So that's another thing. There's also a lawyer, and his name escapes me, again, do a Google. He's from Arizona State University, and he actually does work on health literacy and legalese and language. So I can't remember what his name is, but he's from Arizona State. We run into this a lot because we do stuff for health plans, and we're in discussion, too, helping pharmaceutical companies with their materials, which is another issue as far as how they print and what they have to do with the FDA. To give all of them credit, they don't know what to do. They try to adhere to what they're supposed to do because they're always under fire anyway with the information that they give. So they're trying to do it correctly. So as we just said, we're starting to be able to change this with corporations and with other organizations too. I mean, I ran into it with the American Heart Association also, and they're a nonprofit. It's the same thing. You know, can we write this? Can we say this? Is it going to be okay? So just saying, I think we're still taking baby steps with this, But I think, too, as some of us have said, we'll break through. People will realize we don't have to use these words. I did this years ago when I wrote Medicaid materials in the 1990s. I'd completely changed all grievance material to be able to be read by the folks that we were targeting, and it got passed through legal. This was in 1991, so I don't know. You know, we go like this with things. So, anyway.
I'm afraid we're out of time, but our speakers will be here for a few minutes if you have individual questions, and thank you for attending this session.